Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Write Boom. It's the podcast where every week we interview writers about writing, and this week is no different. Our guest this week has done quite a few things. First of all, he's the author of Bloodsucker Blues, a Vamps in Vegas story, which was an Amazon.com bestseller. In addition to being a writer, he's also a three-time award-winning voice actor, podcast host, and audiobook narrator, having narrated and produced over a dozen audiobooks. Where do I find all these voice actors? I have no idea. He's also the creator and co-host of After the Ending, a very popular film podcast, and I don't want to talk too much about that because I'm going to have him talk about it. Everybody, please welcome my good friend, Mike Spring. Welcome to the podcast. Mike, how are you?
I'm very well, Jason. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. You know, I ordered a studio audience, but they are late.
Oh, I hate when that happens.
Yeah, they would have been applauding wildly.
Well, luckily for you, I always imagine applause in my head whenever I speak. I just like to think people are up clapping for me all the time. So I already had imagined it. So no worries.
That's so good because like I think about that all the time and I feel like, you know, that it's weird, but it's nice to hear somebody else say it.
Yeah, perfectly normal.
You know, even when you walk into a room.
Absolutely. Especially when I walk into a room.
Okay, good. Then I feel a little bit more normal. Tell us about your personal life as much as you want to get into, like who you are.
Okay. So I am Mike Spring. I live in upstate New York, and I am married to my lovely and talented wife, Melissa. I have twin 10-year-olds, Ava and Jackson. I got a couple of dogs, a couple of frogs in our house. And I think my defining characteristic, you know, in terms of what I'm into is I'm a geek and I fly my geek flag pretty high. lifelong like Star Wars, Star Trek fan. I've collected comic books for over 30 years. I have a pretty ridiculous collection of comics. I've been reviewing movies for about 20 years now. I've watched and seen more movies than I can even remember at this point. So basically anything kind of pop culture related, I'm into.
You're all over it.
I pretty much am, yeah. Music, movies, books, comics, magazines, toys, you name it. I've got my fingers in every corner of it.
Do you ever get the dogs and the frogs mixed up?
Luckily not. My daughter has African dwarf frogs. They were sent home or given away after a school science project where they raised different little creatures to, you know, to learn about the life cycle. So we got some African dwarf frogs about the size of a quarter. And they live in a fish tank all the time. They're kind of surprisingly fascinating.
Can you imagine that conversation, though? It's like, okay, what do we do with these things now? Like, we went through the project. Like, what are we going to do with these? Oh, we'll give them to a kid.
Right. Here's the thing they don't mention. When we went to the pet store and got the little pamphlet on how to take care of them, it says that African dwarf frogs can live about 10 to 15 years, which means like when my daughter's away at college, I'm going to be the one taking care of them, which right. I had no idea about when we agreed to this.
You will be sidled with the frogs in the end.
Yes. Yes. Luckily, they're pretty low maintenance, I got to say.
Well, thanks for that introduction. I want to get talking about writing because you have a lot of very interesting projects, but I want to go back to the beginning. What got you started, like interested in writing? What was that first spark that kind of got you wanting to put quill to parchment? Because, yeah, it was that long ago.
Yeah, right. Thanks. What are you trying to say? Well, you know, I think so. There's two parts to that question. I've always loved language and words. I started reading at a very young age. My mom will always tell the story about how I'd go to the library when I was 5 or 6 and I'd come out with a stack of like 20 books because I just wanted to read everything. And I was a fairly advanced reader, I guess, for a young kid. And as I got older, I read more and more advanced books. But so I've always really loved reading, and I played around with writing always, but I never really got into it sort of full time. And I don't know if that's just laziness on my part or what, but somehow or another, it sort of kept working its way into my career as a technical writer, a copywriter. I always ended up if we needed things edited at whatever job I was at, people would be like, here, you know, spell check this, or hey, can you write this for me? And it, you know, turned out I was pretty good at it. And so for many years, I just sort of wrote for jobs. And then I got into entertainment reviews because, as I said, I love movies. So I started reviewing DVDs about in like 1997. And that really was what I spent most of my time writing for the next, you know, decade or so. And but I always wanted to write fiction, but I think I was scared to, because I knew I could write like a, I can, you give me a subject matter, like a, something to review, and I can bang out, you know, a paragraph or a page in no time. But I think there was definitely some fear in, well, what if I'm not good at writing fiction like I am writing nonfiction? And so that was one of the big hurdles I had to get over.
So that's interesting, because it leads me into the next question. Like, so you published the Vegas and Vamps story on Amazon. So obviously you kind of got over that fear. When was that moment? Like, when did you say, you know, wow, I could actually do this. Like I could make some traction as a fiction writer.
Well, I'll tell you know, those commercials where they say, this is my aha moment.
Yes.
Well, I had one of those. And I read a lot, and I read a lot of YA books. I'm a big fan of a lot of the YA, the young adult stuff. I like, you know, like the Hunger Games books and even the Twilight books, which I know aren't popular with some people. But, I, you know, all those types of books I like, because they're fast paced. They speak to my sensibilities. And so I've been, you know, reading those, as well as more typically, you know, grown up novels for a long time. And there was a very popular series, which I'm not going to name because I don't want to insult anyone. It's a very popular series, and it's had a couple movies made. And I really love the concept of it. It's this great kind of mystery, dystopic future type of thing. And I thought the concept for it was amazing. I was really, really into it. And I read the book, and it was really terrible. It was so, so poorly written, in my opinion. I didn't like the way the writer revealed things. I didn't like the way he structured the story. I mean, literally everything was saved almost to like the last chapter. It's like 95% of the book, you have no idea what's going on. And then like the last chapter, it's like, bam, 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 reveal, 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 cliffhanger ending. And it really annoyed me, because it was just things like the main character would ask a question and people just wouldn't answer it for like pages and pages on end. He'd be like, hey, what's going on? They're like, you're a newbie. Ha ha ha. Moving on to the next scene. I'm like, no, like you can't, you know. And so I really hated that book, but I shouldn't say I hated it, but I really had a lot of problems with it. And so when I realized that this book had sold millions of copies and there was a movie being made, and I said, well, I can write at least as good as this guy can. And that was sort of my moment. Like, I know that sounds kind of egotistical, but I was like, this book is not very good. And yet there's a whole series of them and people are buying them by the droves. And I may not be the world's greatest writer. I may not be Shakespeare or Hemingway, but I can at least write a book that's as good as this book right here. And if he can sell a million copies, then why can't I? And so that really was what got me over the hump of not, you know, being able to do it, or not thinking I was confident enough to do it. And so I sat down and started writing, and Vamps in Vegas was born.
Wow. So I'm not familiar with Shakespeare. Is he somebody that might be interested?
He's kind of old school. Yeah. A little tough to get through.
Tough to get a hold of?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. I'm just, you know, I'm looking for guests. I'm always looking for guests.
Yeah, I'll try and put a good word in for you if I see him.
So let's take a look at what that looks like. When you decided, oh my God, I could do this, and you sat down and wrote, you're obviously busy. You have two twin kids going through the same things at the same times, you know, a family and animals in the house. Like, how did you make it happen? I think that's a challenge for a lot of people. Like, they got a lot of busy stuff going on. How did you get a book written with all that stuff going on?
Well, I'll tell you, I you know, originally it was very slapdash. You know, I'd kind of write here and write there wherever I could find time. And I would do a lot of it late at night at first. And that was problematic because I would come home, I'd work all day, I'd be on a computer, and then I'd spend time with my kids and eat dinner and put the kids to bed. And by the time they were in bed, it was, you know, 9 o'clock or whatever. And then it's like, hey, now I've got to sit in front of a computer and do more work, which just wasn't that appealing. And, you know, I'm not really a morning person, but, you know, I get up pretty early with the kids anyway. Usually I'm up by like 6:30 with the kids. So what I started doing was, because I wasn't making the progress that I wanted to, I just finally started to get up a half an hour before the kids. You know, if I knew they're up at 6:30, I would get up at like 6 o'clock in the morning and I would write for that half hour. And I would just write, nothing else. I didn't edit. I wouldn't even correct a typo, even if I knew I made it. I would just pour it out. And I got to the point where I could do 1,000 to 2,000 words pretty easily in that half hour. So, you know, in a matter of 10 days, I could write a 20,000 word novella. Now, then I needed to revise it and edit it, because it obviously wasn't coming out very polished, but I had to get it out. That was the hardest part for me, was finding the time to do that. And once I settled into doing that 5 days a week, Monday through Friday before work, you know, it was only a half an hour earlier. So I wasn't like getting up at like 4 a.m. or anything like that. And I found that I adjusted to it pretty quickly. And that's how I tend to write now, is that early in the morning. And some days I want more time because I'm on a roll. And some days I will go a little bit over, but usually it's kind of whatever I can get done in that half hour. And then I let it go for the day.
So you kind of write in the margins.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically.
Of your time. And that's, right. That's kind of a theme that's, you know, on this podcast so far, that's been the theme is you find the time, you know, 15 minutes here, 10 minutes there, half an hour in the morning, and then you're making progress.
Right.
You know, you start to see it grow. So then that kind of leads to the next question, you know. Would you say that that's the biggest challenge for you? Is once you get over the fear of it, is it the time constraint that's really the issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, because I'm not a full-time writer. You know, I mean, I am, because I'm a technical writer professionally, but you know, I'm not an author who makes their living writing yet. So, you know, for those people, it's great because they can get up in the morning and they can write all day if they want. I don't have that luxury. So, that is, I think, one of the biggest challenges, really, is trying to find the time to write. And for me, I write in a very like kind of pedal to the metal style. Like I said, I don't do any editing or anything like that. So I tend to blow through the first draft and I get all excited about it. And then my other big challenge is like, then I have to go back to it. You know, after I finish the first draft, I like to let it sit for a few days, but then it's like, oh, well, I kind of have to go and revise that, but I'd really rather write something else. I'd rather start a new story. And that leads to a lot of unfinished stories. So I do have to have a little bit of discipline and, you know, work my way back to finishing things. That's a challenge for me personally.
I actually saw a quote the other day that kind of wraps that, you know, sums that all up. And I can't remember who it was, but it was that the first draft is all passion. And during editing, that's the technique.
Right.
Like,
right.
You're just getting that first draft. And that sounds like exactly what you're doing. That first draft is just wherever it comes from. It's out on the paper, the digital paper. Yep. And then you have to go back and make it something.
Yes. Yes. But I think that getting that first draft down is the most important step. And I think that sounds obvious, but a lot of people I know spend a lot of time outlining and planning and plotting and thinking about it. And then they don't ever get around to actually putting it on paper. You know, they can't find the time, or for whatever reason, they just don't get around to doing it. And so, you know, for me, it's the most fun part, but it's also the part that's the most important for me. Because then I know once I have that first draft, I like editing once I start doing it. I'm an editor by trade. So, that's not a problem for me to do, as opposed to getting the motivation, as opposed to writing more. But that first draft, I think, is just so important to get it down and have it out there.
That's really great, because that's something that I actually struggle with, is that the planning process, and then I'll start to write a little bit, and then because I'm on a computer, if I make a mistake, I back it up and I fix it, and then I lose flow.
Right.
And so I really need to look at that and kind of redo my process a little bit. So that's actually very helpful.
Yeah. I mean, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I certainly don't want to criticize anybody's process, but I have a friend who also writes, and we were talking about it one time, and he was telling me he has to have every page perfect before he, you know, lets it go. And that's great. If that's your process, that's great. But by the same token, he's still working on the same book he's been working on for like 3 years. And, you know, in half that time, I've published 2 books and written 3 other ones. So, you know, that's great if that's how you want to do it. But for me, I can't. I've got to get that first draft out, because it's about expediency, you know, and passion. I just can't. If you edit everything as you go, to me, it's like you said, you lose your flow and you lose that passion, and it makes it harder, because then what happens, I think, is it slows your writing down, because then now you're inside your own head and you're second guessing everything, and you're not, you know, just writing on the fly. So then the thinking gets in the way, and I think it slows you down immeasurably. But again, that's just my process. Everyone does what works for them.
Exactly. And that was kind of the point of this whole podcast, was to find people with different stories, different processes, so that there was something for a listener to hang their hat on and say, hey, they're kind of, their life is kind of like my life, and their process is really attractive to me.
Right.
Like, you know, for me, like that I know that my editing as I go slows me down. And that I know that now that I know that you're successful in what I really want to be doing is just like letting it out and then going back and editing it. It's like, oh, that's pretty inspirational.
Okay. Well, thank you.
So you inspired a listener.
Oh, good. I'm glad I could do that.
It just happens to be the host.
That's good too.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about, you have a really interesting podcast that on the surface isn't about the writing, but really in the guts of it, it is about writing. It's called After the Ending. And I highly recommend that you take a listen to this podcast because I'm going to let Mike explain what it's about.
Well, After the Ending is basically what happens after your favorite films end. You know, I've sat through a million movies in my time, and a lot of times they end. You know how that is when you're watching a movie that you really love and it's over and you're like, ah, but I want more. And, you know, so for me, it was about, well, what happens to these characters after this movie ends? What could be the continuation of their story? And honestly, it got started because I was watching the 2015 remake of Poltergeist, and I'm going to go into a little spoilery territory if anybody cares, but basically these people move into this house, it gets haunted by ghosts, and at the end of the movie the house explodes in like a spasm of ghostly energy, and then the family has to leave. And I was watching it, it's actually a pretty good movie, but I'm watching it and I'm like, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I'm like, huh, you know, I don't think homeowners insurance will cover that. Like, and that's really what went through my head. I'm like, well, what do you do? Like, you bought this house, your ghosts just blew it up, but your insurance company isn't going to accept that as a reason. So now you're on the hook for this mortgage in a house you can't live in, and you have no insurance to cover it. What do you do? You know, like that's the thought that went through my head. And and from that I went, well, I think this is a podcast because I want to know. So for our very first episode, we did do Poltergeist, and my co-host is a guy named Phil Edwards from the UK, and he's lovely. And so each week we take two movies and we both come up with our after the endings, and we sort of look at the day after, which is kind of the immediate events right after the movie ends, the immediate aftermath, which is kind of anywhere from, you know, a couple days to 6 months, a year after the movie ends, and then the long term, which can be anywhere from days to weeks to months to years to even centuries. And so we sort of break it down and you know, just kind of have fun with them, and you know, they're different every time. It really depends on the movie, and we've done all sorts of different movies, so we have a lot of fun with it, and I think listeners seem to really enjoy it as well.
Yeah, I actually do enjoy it, and it's nice. One feature of the podcast is for every episode there are two movies that Mike and Phil do the end after the ending for, and they're so like disparate films. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes they have like nothing in common, and most of the time, I've seen at least one of them. So, you know, that makes me want to, like, listen to the episode. And there's been a few movies where it's like, oh, that movie sounds kind of interesting. I think I might want to check that one out. I mean, is that something that you do, like, intentionally?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, when I first started, we first started crafting it, I wanted to work very hard to do, A, I wanted to do two movies, and B, I wanted to make sure they were kind of different. And the reason for that is, you know, with the two movies, it is really, that's a pure, I don't want to say a marketing thing, but kind of a strategy thing. If I just do, say, Poltergeist, and you've never seen Poltergeist, it's very easy for you to skip that episode. But if I do Poltergeist and Castaway, which was my first episode, well, chances are you've seen at least one of those. And then you're going to be interested in listening to the movie. And you can either skip the movie that you haven't seen, or because we synopsize the plot, if you're not that interested in seeing it, you can listen to us kind of tell you what happens and then our endings, and I think you can still enjoy it. But I wanted to make sure there was kind of something for everyone, you know, so to speak, in every episode. So that was definitely intentional. We sort of pick kind of an A movie and a B movie. So usually we'll do a movie that is kind of one of those, hey, everyone's seen this. And then the B movie is sort of like, well, this is a movie that a lot of people have seen, or maybe people in the film geek circles have seen, but maybe it's not as popular as, you know, something else. So we'll pair up like, you know, a big a comedy like Pretty Woman we just did with a smaller science fiction film like Moon, which is kind of a cult classic. And that way everyone's seen Pretty Woman. You might not have seen Moon, but there's at least something for everyone. And then we just try and do different movies because it's, you know, when you're writing the ending, sometimes they, you can sort of fall into rhythms with certain types of movies. So A, it keeps it interesting for us. And B, I don't know, I find it fun. Like, we just, in our new episode, we're getting ready to record, we're doing Gone with the Wind and Masters of the Universe, which I think is about two different movies as you can possibly get. But I love that because it's like, well, yeah, I mean, I could do like, you know, Tango and Cash and, you know, another action movie. But then it's kind of like, well, that seems a little one note, you know. So I kind of try and mix it up a little bit just to keep it fun and interesting. And sometimes it makes for some really interesting crossovers or, you know, just fun anecdotes, things like that. So.
Right. And the endings range from like super sweet to like serial killer, you know. Especially lately with Phil. I don't know what's is he okay? I mean, because yeah, he seems very angry.
He's definitely got a bit of a dark side to him, but it's all in good fun. But yeah, they do range. It's interesting. You know, we never know which way the endings are going to go, I think, for both of us until we sit down and start writing them. And, you know, while my original thought was sort of like, okay, what would happen if this was the real world? And I sort of still try to stick to that. But very often it goes into the silly or the science fiction or, you know, suddenly you're doing an ending for a very standard movie like Pretty Woman, and then suddenly there's time travel involved, and it's right, kind of because there's no rules, you know, we can kind of do whatever we want with it. So a lot of times you'll find that our endings can be similar, sometimes they're very different, and it's always surprising to me. There are definitely times though where, you know, a lot of times I'm not afraid to get a little goofy or do weird character crossovers and things like that. There are certain movies that'll come about where I'm very serious about them, where I have to get, like, you have to get it exactly right. Like, The Crow is one of my favorite movies of all time. And it's a dark action film, but it's got this really, really heartfelt romance at the center of it. And, like, so for me, that was an ending that I could not make it silly or goofy or anything off the wall. Like, I had to stay true to the spirit of the film because it's a very important movie to me, you know. So sometimes that doesn't happen all that often, but sometimes I do get a movie where I'm like, okay, this has to be just right, you know. So.
Right. And I loved that movie, too.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yep, it's one of my favorites.
I remember seeing that when it came out, actually, in theaters.
Yeah, yeah, me too. But good stuff.
So what piece of advice would you give to not only just up-and-coming writers, but writers who are, you know, just trying to write?
Well, two pieces of advice then for people who are kind of in the writing phase and people who are a little further along. My first piece of advice is really, and I know this has been said a million times before, but just write. Doesn't matter if it's good or bad or everything can be edited and revised. But if you can't get that first draft down, it's not going to do you any good, you know? And I set up at conventions sometimes and I sell my books and I talk to people and this sort of leads to my second piece of advice. And like, I remember this one time I met a girl and she's like, oh, I've been writing a fantasy novel and I'm just about finished. I'm going to be publishing it. I'm like, oh, that's fantastic. She's like, yeah, it took me 7 years. And I was like, that is not fantastic. I mean, I didn't say that to her, but, so my second piece of advice is let it go, to quote Elsa from Frozen. But,
I'm sorry. I have a 7-year-old daughter. I'm not familiar with that movie.
Right. Exactly. Write your book, edit your book, revise your book, get, you know, beta readers and feedback and finish it and let it go. Because I know a lot of people who have books that have been done for years and they keep tinkering and editing and revising. They never feel, you know, ready to put it out there. I'll say this about my books, my vampire books. Generally, I've gotten very positive feedback from the two of them that are out there. People seem to really enjoy them. They're far from perfect. I don't think they're the greatest books in the world. You know, my style of writing is very kind of, I don't want to say brief, but I, you know, I'm not writing like 800 page epics. I'm writing sort of beach reads, you know, fast paced, you know, funny, enjoyable reads. I could probably go back and revise them for another year or two, but then they're never going to get done, you know? So my whole mission was to write books that I could publish. So I wrote them, you know, I revised them. They went through 3 or 4 drafts each. I got some beta readers, you know, I had my wife read them, give me feedback, which was invaluable. And then I just said, okay, they're done. They're good enough, you know, get them out there so people can read them, because you can write the great American novel, but if it never gets published, it's not going to do you any good. So I'd rather have people read my books, and I think most people will enjoy them because they're pretty good. I think they're good enough to, for people to, you know, really sink their teeth into, no pun intended.
That was terrible.
But, you know, I'm not going to win the Pulitzer Prize anytime soon, but I'm okay with that. But my books are out there and people can read them. And that's more than some people can say who have been writing, but just won't put it out there. So those are kind of my pieces of advice.
That's a great lesson because, first of all, people that are doing that are like chasing perfection, but perfection doesn't exist.
Right.
Because first, like people that read your book, somebody will always have a problem with it.
Right.
Like there will always be at least one person, and that's like being very generous, one person that is going to say, this sucks for whatever reason, because they don't like vampires. Or whatever. So if you're editing your book for like 7 years, it's like, you know, you're right. You have to just let it go because you're never going to get perfect because there's no such thing as perfection. Like there's no perfect story, anything.
No, definitely.
So that's another really great lesson. Thank you so much, Mike.
Absolutely.
So the next thing that I'd like you to do is just plug whatever you're working on. Let us know where, you know, what projects you're working on right now.
All right. Well, first and foremost is Bloodsucker Blues. There's the first two parts of that are out. And basically the way it works is they're short novels. They're about 20,000 words each. And there's four total chapters or novellas, if you will. Each one tells a standalone story, but they do sort of form a larger story. So when you read all four of them, it makes one big novel. The first two are published and available on Amazon. The third and fourth books are written. I'm in the process of revising them as we speak, and they will hopefully be published very soon. And I also have a full-length science fiction novel, which will hopefully be coming out soon. I won't say too much about that, though, because I got to get the vampire books finished first. So those are available on Amazon.com or any ebook services, actually. You can search for Bloodsucker Blues or search for me, Mike Spring, and you will find those. Also, of course, After the Ending really is something I'm very passionate about. I think it's a really fun podcast, and I think people will like it. Especially if they like movies, but even if they're not humongous movie fans, we do cover enough movies that people have seen. And that is available on iTunes and SoundCloud. And again, pretty much every podcast, feed catcher, whatever you want to call them, that you can find it on. Just look for After the Ending and you will find us. And you can check out my website, which is simply www.wordsoutloud.com. And you can get some free stuff there. If you click over there, you can get the first Bloodsucker Blues book for free. So that's kind of neat. And if you're into the Facebook thing, you can go over to facebook.com/MikeSpringOfficial and you can follow me there.
How about the Twitter?
I am on Twitter @TheMikeSpring. It's mostly just a mirror of my Facebook feed, though. I used to be on Twitter a lot more, but only so many hours in a day. So it basically just now kind of posts whatever I throw up on Facebook. So.
And Friendster?
No.
No? No? No Friendster? No, no. MySpace?
I'm sure there probably is still a MySpace profile up there. I don't think I ever deleted it, but Lord knows it's been forever since I've even looked at MySpace.
Right. Well, Mike, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Please tell me you'll come back later on and let us know what is going on with you.
I would be happy to. Like I said, I'm actually hoping to launch my big sci-fi novel sometime this year, by the end of the year. So I would love to come back on and tell you about how that goes, because it's either going to be a great success or less of a success. So hopefully I'll have some good success stories to share that we can inspire people with.
I'm sure it will be a huge success.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. And thank you for joining us for another episode of Write Boom, the podcast where we interview writers about writing. Get in touch with us on Facebook. Our Facebook page is Write Boom Podcast. So facebook.com/WriteBoomPodcast. You can follow me on Twitter @JasonNoxon. That's JasonNoxon. And I'll post Write Boom updates there. And of course, we're on the web, which seems really chaotic now. Or not chaotic.
Archaic,
yeah. I don't know why. Websites seem like so 1980s. Anyways, yeah. We're at writeboom.com, and you can listen to our episodes there. But please go over to iTunes and, first of all, subscribe, and then give us a review over there. That could help us out a lot. And anytime you want to email me and make suggestions, You can email me at jason@writeboom.com. Until next time, what are you doing listening to podcasts? Go write.